Welcome to the Round 18 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week we're joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. I hope you had a better week than me.
Yes, I beat you in terms of scoring, so yeah, I'm happy, but to be honest, it's bittersweet because I'd prefer both of us doing well, and I think both of us slid in the rankings a little bit, so I'd prefer it if we're both still sitting in the top 500, but we'll get to our score update shortly. In terms of what we're going to talk about this episode, we're going to look at Barlow's injury. He's confirmed as out for the remainder of the season.
Ooh.
It's really unfortunate, and so we'll be looking mostly at forward line replacements and also talking through a few rookies. In terms of a personal update, Mark, why don't you kick us off for the round?
Well, I don't want to sound like a whiner, mate, but things didn't go well. I had Laird and Bartel missing. Not great. I had Brand and Collins to play at least. So I didn't cop a donut, but they only scored 100 points between them. Then I did the awesome move of Ablett to Hanbury, and he scored his lowest score of the year with 68. I guess Selwood was the other one that I was probably, he was probably the closest to picking, and he scored 128, so there's 60 points gone. I also had Barlow and Delidio, who were both over 60 at halftime, totally killing it, looking like doing awesome. Very glad that I held Barlow. Like, I'd saved a trade. I'd totally done the right thing by holding Barlow, and then he goes and does his shoulder, gone for the season. Lids, they put him on ice at halftime with a, they didn't even say it was an actual twinge to his calf, just a bit of calf soreness. And so did not lead to good scoring, mate. 22-28. I dropped nearly 300 spots in the ranking, which is a lot to drop during the top 500. So I've gone from 2 weeks ago, I was 240th, and now 642nd. And I felt like I'd saved trades, and I felt like I had a good bench, but things are still just falling apart. I guess it's not unreasonable to have a couple of unlucky weeks, and the Nick Nat and Dalhouse week combined with this week missing a few premiums over the last month has really sort of burnt my plans a bit. How'd you go, mate?
I shared some of your unfortunate stories, Mark. Rory, Laird and Bartel being probably the key reason I reckon our leagues probably suffered a little bit this week. I think in the wider community, we probably are overrepresented in terms of having that Bartel-Laird combo. And Collins and Brand to come on field, the same as you, Mark. Just didn't cut it. 58 and 48. It could have been a different story if luck had gone our way. But yeah, just things didn't line up this week. Had Rant score 67, which isn't great. Hanbury, as you mentioned, Mark, 68. And Wells, for people that kept him to be tagged on the week he gets back and scoring a 61 wasn't brilliant. But I had a few shining lights that sort of kept my scoring up a little bit. I had Toby Green score 122, and he's an important POD that I need firing in order to move up. And Chad Wingard 106. So those two are fairly key to my success because they can either be, you know, great or absolute liabilities. So when it works out like that, they can help save my score a little bit. So as a result, I scored 23-28 for the round. And did catch up a little bit to you, Mark, but I still dropped in the ranking at 740th. I was very happy with my trade from Ablett, though. I took a little bit of a risk. I passed on Neil and Sloan, and both had me really worried. But Neil scored in the 60s, and Sloan scored under 110, which I was surprisingly pleased about. And Bontempelli was the player that I went to, which I'm really excited about because he is a unique player, and he trumped them all. He scored 121, which I'm super psyched about. So that's 10 weeks in a row. Averaging above 120 now, and he didn't actually come in to too many teams. He's only in 19,000 teams at the moment, so 7,000 people brought him in, and I'm pretty happy that he's in under 10% of teams, and hopefully he should kill it because they've got a pretty good run home.
Nice one, mate. And things can change around very quickly, so hopefully I'm a bit more chipper next week on the podcast.
Yep. All right, a bit of a group update. The leader in our Supercoach group scored quite a lot better than the both of us, and there were quite good scores across our community, so it's good to see not all of you had down weeks like Mark and I did, but David's Mal's Affair scored 2574. Wow. And moved up to 3,900th. So congratulations to you, David. That's a massive score for this week. And we'll just crack on into the show now, Mark. The first topic was injuries and suspensions, as we do each week. And before we get on to Barlow, let's talk about Delidio. And Daniel Wheels has asked about him, what to do with Lids. Good chance he plays this week. That's the talk. And even if he doesn't, and he's back next week, that seems to be the story at least, you would think that, you know, with minimal trades to go and at this point in the season that he's a keep.
I guess it does depend a little bit how many trades you have. He's a little bit like Wells in the sense that he's had injuries before that they've told us it's a week or two, but then it's turned into like a really extended period of time. So even though positive signs are coming out of Richmond and that they're saying that there's no tear in the scans, still a little bit skeptical about what is going to happen with lids. But like you said, with limited trades, I think that you at least have to wait and see for a week, which is good news, I guess.
Yeah, I think a wait and see approach seems to be the sensible thing to do.
Yeah, I think he hurt his calf getting so many touches because he had 14 possessions in the second quarter.
It was an unfortunate turn of events for you, mate. Next player we're talking about is Barlow. So Simon Clark's asked about Barlow and so have a lot of other people out there. He's asked more specifically looking at the top two scorers. So for people that don't have Dustin Martin, is Barlow to Dusty a no-brainer? Or, as he's put it, would you potentially think about Zorko, who's actually averaging fairly similarly? He's averaging 111.71 and Martin 111.5. But Zorko's had a quieter patch in rounds 11 and 12 where he scored 97 and 86, not even that bad, and he's only two scores under 100 for the whole year. As a result of that, he's about $60,000 cheaper than Martin. Would you consider him ahead of Martin? Or is Martin just such ridiculous form that you wouldn't want to not be on that train?
Yes, I think that that's the answer to the question, that Martin is just crushing it so hard that his upside is really high. And like we saw on the weekend, he can put out those 150s. So I think that although there's a bit of a cash difference, if I didn't have Dusty at this point, I'd just try and bring him in to negate the advantage that others could get. Like, he's winning best on ground pretty much every week. And he seems to have found a tank this year. Like, the last few years, you'll see him play an awesome half and then fade, but he just seems to keep going these days. So, look, I think Zorko is still a really, really good option, but I would definitely have Dusty a fair way ahead.
Yeah, I read an interesting article today. I don't know how many people would necessarily agree with this, but I read that Sean Hampson was talking about Dusty and himself going to see a mindfulness coach. And mindfulness is just about being aware of your emotions and keeping a positive outlook. And I think it's really important as a football player to just, no matter what position you're in, no matter what quarter you're in, no matter what the game state is, you approach every contest with that same consistency and effort. And I think that's something that Martin may have lacked a little bit in years past. He's been a little bit immature, that he can sort of dominate parts of games, but then he'll probably have quieter patches. So you'd see Martin score 80 points to half time, and then we'd all pull our hair out because he only scores 20 more points in the second half. He seems to apply himself a lot more consistently throughout the entire game. Seems to be getting 30 plus disposals all the time. It's just how effective he is because he's getting them in the clinches. And so it's a little bit of a weird thing to throw out as a positive, but I think that mindfulness training seems to be paying dividends.
I mean, if it's coming from Hampson has completely turned his career around this year. You would have thought at the start of this year he'd be pretty likely to be delisted at the end of the year, but he's keeping Marek out of the team and actually playing really well.
Absolutely, Dustin Martin is top of the tree at the moment. I think if you look at his average since round six, he's averaging close to 120 or maybe even more than that. I haven't actually done the calcs, but it's been ridiculous. So available in the forward line, you absolutely need to get on that. All right, before we move on to the next question, obviously if you have Dusty, Zorko is a fantastic option though, because he is averaging that 111 mark. I guess the next question would be comparing Zorko to a Zach Merritt type. If you didn't have either, Zachy Merritt, 121, 129 and 138 his last three. The rest in round 14 definitely helped him out, as you assume it would, because playing in a depleted team like Essendon, it'd take your toll as a young midfielder. Burst out the blocks since the byes and is averaging 109 for the season at the moment. Bonkers.
Yeah, and I guess it's tricky to take someone at the top of their upscale, like when they're just going really, really well and their price is starting to really motor, their average for the last 4 weeks is huge, and comparing that to someone that maybe has come off a couple of quieter games in the last month, sometimes it's better to not take the person at the very top, like a Zach Merritt. So, look, I think the first call, I think that Zorko's more mature, stronger body probably has me maybe slightly leaning that way, but I think it's like 55-45. I think they're both really good picks. I guess there was talk on the weekend that Zach had a bit of a tight quad at one point during the game, probably from a bit like Delio's, just getting the ball too much and kicking it. I mean, he's in amazing form. Got the Lions this week. If Robinson doesn't go to him, you'd lock him in for another 130. Look, I think it's a very, very close call, and when I first started the week, I'd probably leaning towards Zach, but at the moment, maybe Zorko just...
Yeah, I think if they were at the same price point, I'd pick Zaki. But like we've mentioned in the past, money tends to count no matter what stage of the season you're at, because it buys you more options for your next injury trade or whatever. And so I tend to agree that, yeah, you'd probably back the stronger body and hope Zorko comes back on that upswing. And I don't think he would average much more than 5 points below Merritt, which, you know, with 6 rounds left to go or whatever, that's 30 points. So I'd probably take the cheaper player there, and hopefully that 40,000 can pick up more than 30 points for you in your next trade.
Yeah, I guess one thing to consider is that Zorko's slide has coincided with Rockcliffe coming back into the team.
Absolutely.
And Rocky taking over that number one mid spot where Zorko really was playing that role before when Rocky was out. So that might be something that you're taking into consideration as well.
Absolutely. That was my next point. So I'll move on to the next question then, Mark. Dean Phelps asked, if he has the top five averaging forwards, wow, absolutely amazing. So that includes Zorko, Martin, and Merritt. Fantastic. Who are the best replacements for Barlow outside of those top five? So if you weren't looking at the lockaway players, so that includes Wells and Montagna, who would you consider? So apart from the top four players, all the other forwards have sort of dipped under 100 as an average over the course of the season. So you'd be looking at guys like Kennedy, Riewoldt, Gunston, Franklin, even Delidio's dropped down to the 95 mark. If you're looking more in that range, Mark, it's a little bit harder to pick between the pack. Have you been looking at the runs home? That could be a fairly important factor with 6 rounds to go.
Yeah, I think with the run home, Riewoldt probably stands out a bit. A lot of games that Eddie had, but then his last 2 weeks haven't been awesome. I know he had a great first half 2 weeks ago and then faded a bit and had a bad first half on the weekend and then got going. So I think that purely on draw, I do like Nick Riewoldt as an inclusion. It's always risky picking the Buddy, Riewoldt, Kennedy types because they can be so up and down. Just one bad game can really affect what happens with their outcome. Like if they put in a 45 or Kennedy could post a 160 or something, like that can have a huge impact. But I guess I'd probably be picking from those three forwards, Toby Green potentially, just with the Giants draw, although he doesn't seem like he's going to average about 100. And Justin Westhoff has the potential to go good, and he's averaging 105 over the last 3 rounds, so has been important for Port in the last few weeks.
I think it's fairly obvious that we have, you know, Martin 1, Zorko 2, and Merritt 3. That's sort of where we landed on. Montagna probably slightly above Wells at the moment with the injury concerns. So those four are potentially locked. Outside of those four, if I had to put you on the spot and make you pick a 1, 2, 3, how would you go?
I guess that I would probably have Buddy, Nick Riewoldt, and a flip between Josh Kennedy and Justin Westhoff. Who would your three be, mate?
My top would be Franklin. I think second, I would actually go with Josh Kennedy. And then I might actually go with a little bit of a smoky here. I don't necessarily know if it's going to work out. I'm just chucking it out there. Josh Jenkins. I think that he's fairly consistent when they win. His upside's absolutely huge. He scored a 170 this year, a 140. And Adelaide have a really sick run home. So he's somebody that I would consider as well. I think
I have him in drafts, so I hope you're right, mate. I think I'd have Gunston ahead of Jenkins.
Fair enough. And maybe somebody that been overlooked a little bit. I think if you look at his last 11 games, Mark, his lowest score has been 58, but his second lowest is 95, then 96. So you may be onto something there, Mark.
Yeah, I like Jack. I almost picked him up really cheap a while ago.
So we're off Barlow talk now and forward trading talk, and we'll move on to the next question here from Lincoln Beggs or at Old Campaigner SC on Twitter. Do we hold fire with Daniel Wells? So came back, as I mentioned earlier, and scored the 61 under the duress of a tag. Your thoughts on Wells, Mark?
Well, I think he was like 20-something at halftime. Like he was really, really struggling and then had a 40-point quarter despite being tagged. We know that Wells has always struggled with the tag, and maybe teams might continue to do that because he was in such great form before he had that injury layoff. I think that if he doesn't get tagged, his scoring potential, what he's shown this year, has been awesome. So although I can see his price dipping, you'd have to have quite a bit of trades to be trading Daniel Wells, I think. And like we said, we wouldn't be trading Daniel Wells into our team, but I wouldn't be trading him out either.
Yep, absolutely agree. So we have one last quick question on trade-in targets, asking about defenders. And the only reason why I wanted to go through this quickly is there's a couple of players that have really turned around their form a little bit over the last few weeks. And
talking about Tom McDonald.
Tom McDonald, absolutely. But not only him, Williams has been doing it for a while, but Williams is still horrendously underrated and therefore underselected at the moment, which is fair enough, plays for GWS. Not exactly the biggest name in Victorian circles, but he's in under 7,000 teams. And he's averaging 94, but, you know, sort of since round 8, I think he's averaging close to 100. So definitely looking very dangerous. And those two blokes are sort of catching the eye at the moment, Mark.
Yeah, I think that Williams, you're probably paying full price for him now, unfortunately. And I think he's definitely someone that I'll be considering starting next year because he has played a decent amount through the midfield. He's pretty versatile and has definitely been getting a heap of the ball and doing really well. And needs a bit of a tank as well because he does fade after halftime. Tom McDonald, I think, again, maybe too late to be bringing him in because he's had all those good games in a row now. But I was a bit skeptical mid-year because he'd had such a slow start to the year, but he has really got it going.
I'd agree with you, Mark, in that they're both sort of closer to the top end of where their pricing should sit. Having said that, McDonald's still at 470, so not breaking the bank either if you did like the look of him. Having said that, he's still averaging 85 for the season, so his downside when he has the 50s and the 40s and the rate at which he can collect those poor scores would worry me in terms of bringing him in. So given the choice between Williams and McDonald, I'd probably just pay the extra if I could for the Williams. Having said that, Chris Connors does seem to have a bit of cash. Boyd is also in his equation, and I think if you didn't have Matty Boyd, he'd definitely be one of the top options, being a top four averaging backman at the moment. I'd quite clearly take him over the other two.
Boyd, Doherty, Shaw and Simpsons should definitely be at the top of your radar.
All right.
And Laird as well. Laird has shown great form. If it wasn't for the hip injury, he was turning out to be a great pick.
And we've seen Laird not convert all of his possessions into maximum Supercoach points. Sometimes he doesn't necessarily use the ball in the most damaging ways for the amount of possessions that he gets, but when he does, he can score, you know, 130 type scores, and we've only seen 2 120 plus scores from Laird. But if he continues that type of disposal rate and can improve his efficiency by just a tad, he could quite comfortably break into that top four. So very good call, Mark. We'll move on to the rookies now, though. And the first question here is from @Danny_14. Best forward rookie option, Naismith v. Markov. He'd like us to consider both scoring potential and job security. How would you compare Oleg Markov, the Richmond forward? He scored 75 and 62, and he's priced at 117,000.
I think that Richmond have no choice. They just have to play the young guys for the rest of the season. So I think Markov's job security should be pretty good. It's interesting to see Castagna also look a lot better than he did in his first couple of games. They just needed to get acclimatized to the standard of AFL footy. It depends on if you've got the ruck link. If you do have a link with your rucks, then that gives Naismith a bit of an edge. But if you're going to bring one in, maybe Markov just based on potentially more job security.
Markov did play a little bit more as a wingman forward prior to arriving at Richmond, and so this is his first season learning off the half back line. So while his job security is good, his disposal rate isn't very high, so that's the only thing I'd call out for Oleg is that, yeah, he might not be the biggest scorer, but then again, neither is Naismith, really. One good thing about Oleg is he does get quite a lot of rebound 50s and does deliver it inside 50 a fair bit as well. And so, yeah, I think I'd agree with you. But having said that, I mean, if you have a ruck forward link already established in a Cox type, then obviously Sam Naismith would look a lot more attractive. We've got two more rookies to talk about. Reuben William for Brisbane is playing off the back line, 102,400, so absolute basement price. Scored 59 and 31. And Ryan Clark playing for the Kangaroos with their recent injuries to their young midfielders has gotten a bit of a gig, 117,000, 60 and 59. Would you recommend either of these two?
William looked pretty good in his first game. I had a bit of second game blues and didn't really get into it. And I think his job security is pretty sketchy. I think they might just be giving him a bit of a taste before the end of the year and then putting him back down to the needful. But Ryan Clark is extremely highly rated at North. They think they've got an absolute winner with him. And they do have quite an extensive injury list. So out of the two, I'd definitely have Clark ahead. I think he'll be a better player long term. And I think that higher rated his club and the situation dictates that he'll probably play a bit more.
agree with that. William doesn't look like he has super job security. He does look a little bit out of his depth, to be honest. So I think you're right in terms of sort of being gifted games maybe a little bit just to see what he is potentially capable of. So that's definitely worrying. Ryan Clark did smash it in the VFL before actually getting his chance at AFL. He's been racking up, you know, in the high 20s possession count-wise in the VFL. He's been averaging a lot of tackles and a lot of clearance. So definitely something that you look for in a rookie. It's nice to know that when they come in, they can at least play an inside game and they're not reliant on just getting that outside ball in order to score. So, alrighty, that wraps up the core of this week's show, Mark. So we'll wrap up again, as we have for the last few weeks, with a captain's corner. Last week, we had 140 into 152, Mark. Dangerfield into Martin. So we're continuing to smash the captain's
corner. Every week so far, haven't we?
Yeah. Since we started this, I think we're averaging about 140. So it's gone very well. Hopefully, we can keep it up this week. Have you had a little bit of a think about who you might go?
I have, mate. I don't think that you could go past Danger against his old club. Players seem to perform really, really well against their old clubs as a general rule, and Danger just being the loophole gun that he's been all year and being way ahead of the rest of the competition, I think that he, if you can, with can get a non-playing player on, which I guess most teams have at this time of the year, then he's your man. And I guess if you're looking for a backup on the Sunday, Dusty might go all right against the Hawks. I think he has a decent record there, and just Hawks don't often tag. I guess if he goes completely nuts, they'll send Liam Shield to him. But I think that ultimately I'd be going Danger into Rockcliffe this week. Rockcliffe against the Bombers at Etihad should be fairly reliable.
My only issue is that I unfortunately don't have any non-playing players on the Sunday at the very moment. So those games are Essendon, Brisbane, Hawthorn, Richmond, Port and GWS. And there are a few players that people might have here and there that might be non-playing, in which case I definitely go Danger with the VC. Unfortunately for me, I'm not quite in that position. So my last sort of non-playing player at the moment looks like that Saturday night game, which means that I need to choose my VC from one of the first four games. And so I'm going to take Hanbury as a vice captain against Carlton. I think the champions tend to rebound when they have a quiet game, especially really consistent ones. And so I'm hoping Hanbury can do that. But having said that, I will likely end up putting the C on Dangerfield anyway, and he's my captain choice. So I have Hanbury into Danger at the moment.
Yep, Pendles on the Friday night against the Kangaroos might not be a bad option either. I wonder what you would take from a vice-captain with Danger to play at skilled against the Crows.
I think I would probably need to see a 130, but if I got a 130, I would potentially relinquish, you know, whatever upside Danger has for that security blanket, because 130 as a captain is something that I'll take pretty much any week, I think. As an upside, right, if Danger scores 170, which is still absolutely huge, you only really lose 40 points, but if he happens to have a poor game, gets injured or whatever, it's just not worth it. And in all likelihood, a good game still looks like about 130 to 140, so I think the risk-reward isn't quite good enough if he's scoring above 130 to pass on that type of score.
I think maybe another option is Pritis at Domain against the Demons.
Yep, absolutely. I think the only reason I don't like Pritis for a VC is that, for me, he's sort of like a C safety blanket.
Yeah. Good call, mate.
Mm. So that wraps up this week's show, Mark. Anything to leave our listeners with ahead of round 18?
Well, I'm hoping that I'm going to come back next week. I'm going to have won both my draft finals, which I did this week.
Nice.
Hoping that my team is going to get back in the top 500. Definitely doable.
Yep.
And I'm hoping the Bombers have their second win for the year. So I should be top of the world next week for the show.
You guys have shortened from $1.85 favourites to $1.52 now, as I'm looking at the odds. And Brisbane are at $2.55. So I think that's the first year I've seen odds for Essendon like that. And so I think you've got lots to be excited for this week.
Bombers have been very good the last 3 weeks.
Definitely have. So that wraps it up for this week's show. I don't have anything particular to add except all the best, and hopefully our leagues get a little bit of a bounce back. I think our top league's still sitting at third at the moment, unfortunately, because of the Laird Bartel sort of kerfuffle for our leagues. Hopefully we move back up, Mark.
A Laird train today, and hopefully Bartel will be back this week and not playing his crap that he did a few weeks before that.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Martin and Goldstein play.
Don't forget, on the Tuesday, you can ask us questions on Facebook and Twitter. That's what we use to form the show. And patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to donate to the show. And we also are going to release a bonus season review episode at the end of the year for our supporters. So that's it for the week. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll catch you again next week. See ya.
Yeah.